The Ozarks at Large podcast is made possible by KUAF's contributing listeners. Support from individual listeners in our community helps pay for the cost of producing and distributing this podcast. If you'd like to support this podcast and other digital media produced by KUAF, you can make a contribution at supportkuaf.com.
This is 91.3 KUAF, and this is Ozarks at Large for Thursday, December 7th, 2017. I'm Kyle Kellums. For the last 3 years, the Walton Family Foundation has given grants to local projects as part of its Design Excellence Program. The goal, according to the foundation, is to elevate the design of public buildings and spaces. Besides green space projects in Northwest Arkansas's largest cities, the foundation also gave a grant to an affordable housing project, a first for the Design Excellence Program. Ozarks at Large's Zuzanna Sitek found out more about the project, and she has more on the state of affordable housing in the region.
I think that I could speak to the way I see a change in culture here that is probably indicative of how you could view affordable housing.
Sterling Hamilton is from Fayetteville, but he spent many years in Seattle and Chicago before coming back.
It's funny because the quality of life in Fayetteville is higher than I knew when I was from here.
While he was away, Hamilton says he spent years working in the nonprofit sector with a focus on affordable housing. Since then, he's moved into real estate development and investment and is now an associate with Sage Partners Real Estate Solutions. Hamilton says Northwest Arkansas has changed a lot since the 1990s and early 2000s.
You didn't see high-end cars, and the houses were a little smaller. There was just a general, not intentional, but a more egalitarian culture because there wasn't as much money. And coming back, it's crazy. You're like, this place looks so much more wealthy than what I remember.
And Hamilton says nowhere is that more evident than downtown Bentonville.
There's obviously a subsidy on downtown Bentonville, which has been an incredible subsidy, one that has driven a walkable, full restaurant scene that's unparalleled probably in small towns in the United States. I mean, I can't, that's a gross generalization, but I would say that most likely there are a few towns like Bentonville.
Downtown Bentonville is also where the nonprofit Community Development Corporation of Bentonville and Bella Vista, or the CDC, is planning its next affordable housing project.
Our mission is creating affordable housing. We have some assisted living facilities that accept Medicaid clients. We do a lot of multifamily that for seniors as well as family properties, and then one of our properties is Havenwood, and it's a 15 unit property with housing services included for single parent households.
That's Casey Kleinens, the director of the CDC. He says as an affordable housing development and management nonprofit, the CDC doesn't have to spend money on owners or shareholders, which allows the organization to put more funds into their properties.
You know, all of our benefit is staying in the company and serving our residents.
The design for the CDC's new affordable housing development is going to be funded by a $120,000 grant from the Walton Family Foundation's Northwest Arkansas Design Excellence Program. Local architect Robert Sharp was one of the architects selected for the project.
In architecture school, affordable housing is addressed as a economic problem and as a sociological problem, and the solutions are often very boxy. Sort of build as cheaply as possible. It's also seen as an opportunity to experiment upon poor people because since they don't have a voice in the projects, then architects get to follow their ego and artistic interests. And the result for decades has been pretty depressing.
The new affordable housing development will be in the Briartown part of Bentonville, just a handful of blocks north of downtown. Sharp says the development will be made up of four individual cottages on land that already belongs to the CDC.
Affordable housing is like traffic and stormwater, where it's a fact of life and you're going to have some of it. If you concentrate it, you get really bad results.
Sharp says the idea is that eventually these cottages will pop up in other parts of the city in people's backyards.
In a growing area, it's really hard to find affordable land. And there's a lot of land that's lying fallow and unused in people's backyards that we can use for affordable housing.
The CDC cottages at Briartown will have tenants and will also serve as examples to homeowners who are interested in building a for-rent cottage on their property. Sharp says this kind of model is already operating in Portland, Oregon.
One of the models there was that there was actually a development corporation that would lease people's land in their backyard. They would drop a cottage in there. They would manage it. And so people didn't have to be part-time landlords or part-time developers.
The Bentonville CDC may eventually adopt that kind of agreement. But for now, though, it will be up to the homeowner to build the cottage and rent it. But Sharp says they will be using the grant money to help homeowners clear one of the biggest hurdles, the design.
That's one of the stumbling blocks for a lot of people is they don't want to go out and hire an architect and go through a two-month design process that could be very expensive and unknown. They want to see what they're going to get.
Sharp says part of the plan is to create several simple and functional designs for cottages that will be between 600 and 900 square feet. Four of them will be built at Briartown, and all of the designs will be put up online so that they're easily accessible to anyone who is interested in building one.
The purpose of actually building four of them is that we want to have the price tag on them. We want to have the Chinese menu of what each aspect of the project costs so people can really get their heads around and what the project looks like and what it would cost to do.
Sharp says the CDC also plans to get the cottage designs pre-permitted by the city to make the construction process a little easier. Karen Minkle, the Home Region Program Director for the Walton Family Foundation, says the cottage project was selected for a design excellence grant because the prototypes can not only be replicated by Bentonville residents, they can also be replicated in all of Northwest Arkansas's major cities.
When we look at our downtowns, in some ways, I think they're harbingers of both our successes as a region and also our potential challenges.
And Minkle says all of Northwest Arkansas's downtowns, not just the one in Bentonville, are getting more expensive. That's why she says the Walton Family Foundation has identified affordable housing as an emerging issue in the region.
There are cautionary tales in the U.S. of cities or regions that have experienced tremendous population growth and economic prosperity, and then they end up becoming communities that predominantly serve the wealthy. And so when you think about where they're facing housing issues, you think about places like San Francisco, like New York City, but also you can see this issue emerging in cities like Pittsburgh or Nashville and places that maybe don't immediately come to mind. And when we talk to cities that have experienced this success and we ask them what they wish they'd done 10 years earlier, housing is usually one of the top issues that they mention.
Sterling Hamilton agrees.
It's good that we're talking about affordable housing because I think the long game is to try and maintain some of that stratification rather than having everything go to the highest price there is.
But he says Northwest Arkansas does face some immediate issues with its supply of affordable housing units.
We're losing dedicated affordable housing at a very fast rate. We've lost almost, in this year alone, we'll have lost 600 designated affordable housing units in Northwest Arkansas.
Hamilton says those units fell under the low-income housing tax credit program, which allows landlords to claim tax credits for a certain amount of years in return for renting at least some of their apartments to low-income tenants at a restricted rate.
And it has to do with apartment units that were built 15 years ago that are coming off of their affordability requirement, and their rents are low enough and in desirable enough places that outside money believes that our market is going up, and if they buy those now and remove affordable restrictions, they can raise the rents.
Hamilton says that conversion is happening to large housing developments in Bentonville that were built around 15 years ago. And he adds it's difficult for local investors to compete with out-of-state interests that are operating with $1 billion or more dollars.
I worked with local investors on three of those large properties. We put in offers, we chased it down to the very end, and the issue was that there are people who have a strategy nationally around apartment buildings like that, and they are willing to pay whatever it takes to get them.
Hamilton says from his experience, right now Fayetteville has a stronger affordable housing market than Bentonville because historically affordable housing has usually been built in Fayetteville.
The dynamics of Benton County are so different than the dynamics of Washington County. I mean, our economic driver is the university in Fayetteville. I mean, it is regional economic drivers, but the university is our economic driver. And that has grown at a pace of universities around the country. It's been a much more organic growth. I mean, you've been able to pace the market with affordable housing. But when you see something like Benton County, it's a once-in-a-lifetime watch this happen. How crazy is this?
But Hamilton says there are things cities in Northwest Arkansas can do to maintain a healthy level of affordable housing units.
Making it easier for I don't know, the Lindsays, the Trinity multifamilies, the guys who are doing workforce housing, making it easier for them to do what they're doing.
Hamilton also says those in the private sector shouldn't be viewed as enemies of affordable housing, but should instead be seen as potential partners. Karen Minkle echoes that sentiment.
As with most challenges, it's not going to be solved by one sector or one entity alone. And so I think one of the best things we can do as a region is begin to have pretty robust conversations about how we might tackle this issue from a lot of different perspectives and with a lot of different sectors engaged. It's development. And so you definitely need developers involved. You need financial institutions involved, as well as local municipal support.
And Hamilton says the affordable housing situation in Northwest Arkansas is actually not that grim in comparison to other parts of the country. He referenced an Arkansas song to make his point.
That line from the song. And it's, you know, we may not have it all together, but together we have it all. And I think people need to, when they're wringing their hands about affordable housing, they need to take a step back and think about the values that make our community what it is. And as long as the people who are here and are moving here begin to subscribe to those values, it will not be perfect, but it will be okay.
The key to that, Hamilton says, is for the Northwest Arkansas community to stay cognizant of the need for stable, affordable housing as the region continues to grow. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Zuzana Sitek.
Architect Frank Sharp says the design for the cottages will be done in the next 4 months, and the construction would be complete in the next 6 months following that.
It's time again for the Season of Giving fundraiser at KUAF. This special on-air fundraiser is the perfect time to get your gift into KUAF before the end of the year. You can support the station you rely on, and it's tax deductible. You can even give a gift membership in honor of a loved one. It all begins next Monday at 6 a.m. and will end Friday evening at 7. And if you'd like to make a challenge pledge to be used during the fundraiser, you can make one right now at KUAF.com/issue-challenge.
Medical marijuana business licenses have yet to be awarded in Arkansas, but industry professionals and patients are meeting in downtown Little Rock this week at the state's first trade show. Booths showcase everything from the technology to grow good marijuana to the surveillance and transportation services needed to keep it safe. Marine Sergeants Ryan Hansen and Jonathan Reeves started Liberty Defense Group LLC in Fayetteville earlier this year just to get in on the action. This is Ryan Hansen.
We both have backgrounds from the military. We're both Marines. We've got 7 deployments to Iraq and Afghanistan between the two of us. We saw an opportunity in this new fledgling business to start a security company and reintroduce vets from the wars back into kind of a transition for them to come back to the civilian world. So we're not only trying to start a business in the cannabis industry, but we're also gearing it towards veterans and veteran-owned, veteran-staffed.
The expo continues through today at the State House Convention Center. According to organizers, more than 500 people bought tickets to the 2-day event. More than 50 companies reserve booths.
91.3 is supported by Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art and its distinguished speaker series featuring photographer Carrie Mae Weems, Friday, December 8th at 7 p.m. Weems' work investigates family relationships, cultural identity, sexism, and more. Her photo series, The Kitchen Table, part of the permanent collection on view at Crystal Bridges. Tickets and information at crystalbridges.org. The Fayetteville Farmers Market moves indoors for the winter. Winter holiday markets will be held Saturday mornings, 9 a.m. until 1 p.m., at Ozark Natural Foods Co-op in Fayetteville. These indoor markets are 100% local and offer holiday gift ideas and farm-to-table meals. Information at FayettevilleFarmersMarket.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. Think for a minute how many electronic devices you've tossed during your lifetime. That digital alarm clock, that Walkman, that computer, and that desktop printer that never quite did what you wanted it to do. In an era of constant upgrades and technological advances, e-waste is a non-biodegradable problem. That's why a service like Free Geek Arkansas is worthy of our attention.
The main business of the Free Geek Arkansas is to take in electronics to keep them out of the landfill.
Olivia Sordo is a volunteer at Free Geek Arkansas. She disassembles computers brought to the Fayetteville warehouse. Olivia is also a well-known and well-respected jeweler, so she upcycles parts of those computers that we've never seen before.
And then I took some of these motherboards. Oops, that's all right. And made clocks out of them. They're really fun. It's really interesting. I made earrings and I make all kinds of things, necklaces.
Not all computers, CD players, and other donated items are losses. Those with hours left to give are refurbished and available for sale at deep, deep discounts. Tuesday afternoon, Nancy Jack, another volunteer at Free Geek Arkansas, led a tour into one of the showrooms with boomboxes, cords, televisions, and much more.
So we also have laptops, big servers, desktop computers for anywhere from $90 to, if you get a fancy MacBook Pro, or we build one for you. Let's say you want a laptop, you can come and tell the guys in the back that you want a MacBook Pro with 600 gigabytes of whatever geeks say, and they'll build it for you and sell it for, well, from $90 to about $200. I think we sold one time to a professor for $350. It was a $1,200 computer.
Volunteers at Free Geek Arkansas say many churches and schools take advantage of the refurbished items, and Zach Slade, the director of Free Geek Arkansas, says all of those sales of rebuilt and repaired electronics are funneled right back into Free Geek's budget to keep the lights on.
If it's not a case that we think we can reuse, we can't put a custom motherboard in it or something, then generally we immediately just harvest its guts and try to find a way to transform that. So some things it's really, really quick and easy, but other things like we had an incubator that came in, a lab incubator. We've got like dentistry drill tools, car instrument clusters, all sorts of different really oddball things, and that can take a while.
And he says the staff stands behind what you buy.
We don't even write all sales are final on our receipts because we want to be able to stand behind our equipment. So if we give you or sell you a piece of equipment, if it malfunctions on you in a year, then we will at least give you in-store credit or try to make it right and replace the equipment.
Zach says Fayetteville's operation is based on the original Free Geek that's in Portland, Oregon. There are a few other Free Geeks in North America, Vancouver, Chicago, Toronto, one that was inspired by the original in Atlanta. This one, ours, started like so many tech startups.
I was doing what we do already out of my own little place. About four or five of us were doing that. We had a bunch of computing equipment in our closets, in our garages, all over the house. And when people needed computers, we would just build them for them, you know, or give out components, or, you know, to Frank him on hard times, we'd just be like, here's your, you know, what you need. And we finally figured out this isn't working. We'd like to have our houses back. So we banded together, put our equipment together, and started this.
Zach, standing in the middle of what he calls 3,800 square feet of computer candyland, says the recent delivery of 32 pallets of discarded televisions can yield exciting results.
Generally, when we get stuff like this in, we will disassemble them to remove the frames and filaments in them. They have some, you know, three or four different plastic sheets that are there, and they're worth keeping. They're kind of neat. They work for light shades or other projects like that. They're just nice plastics. But if we can't salvage anything else out of it, can't transform it into a light or anything, then we batch it up and send it to our recycling partner, Esco.
Zach, standing in the middle of what he calls 3,800 square feet of computer candyland, says the recent delivery of 32 pallets of discarded televisions can yield exciting results.
It's the same thing as like digging for a record. You know, you go through and you're just going and going and going, and you never know. You may find that diamond in the rough nobody has seen yet, or hands have passed over several times because it looked different or weird or strange. But our volunteers that are here all the time, that's part of the joy, is they get to see it coming in. They know what's happening, and they get the word out or they pick it for themselves.
Amid all of the recycled items, cheap technological discoveries, and cool stories is a sobering reality. Every year, new models push old ones out, and electronic waste grows. Zach Slade says we don't yet have a handle on this high-tech refuse.
And so we're very lucky that we can handle this volume of this kind of television. You know, the older CRTs, there's millions and millions more of them than there are of these, but we have no reasonable way of taking care of them. And it costs money to actually recycle them, and so that's one of the biggest problems we find. They're just in ditches and wherever because people can't afford to reasonably get rid of them.
But thanks to volunteers like Olivia Sordo, some of those hard drives and other computer bits can end up around a neck or hanging from ears.
These are earrings. And these are the memory sticks, and we cut them and make earrings out of them. I think these are very pretty. These are, again, some of the disc readers.
Multicolored, multi-shaped earrings and necklaces created by Olivia Sordo are sold at inexpensive prices at Free Geek. Volunteers plan to create a showcase for her work soon. Everything about the place is done with a bit of whimsy. Eugene Sargent, a sculptor and artist with a brilliant eye, is creating an installation in the entrance that will be floor-to-ceiling immersion of expired computer motherboards. And to the right is a room with working computers and printer that people can use for free. Nancy Jack says it's ideals like those that led her to begin volunteering at Free Geek Arkansas.
Anybody can come in here that doesn't have access to a computer and wants to apply for a job, they can come here and do it. Or if they want to download documents from court and print them off, they can print them off for free.
Free Geek Arkansas is at 521 West Ash in Fayetteville, and donations, shopping, and volunteering hours are Tuesday through Saturday from noon to 7 p.m. You can find out more at freegeekarkansas.org. And you can find all sorts of things in that warehouse. One last question. Have you gotten an 8-track player?
Yes. You want one for the car or standalone for your component set?
This is Ozarks at Large.
Black women are 3 times as likely to die giving birth as white women. Poverty and lack of prenatal care are factors, but so is racism and the unrelenting stress hormones it releases over years.
Pregnancy is a big stressor on the body, and a healthy body can adapt to it, but a body that's worn out will have a much harder time.
I'm Mary Louise Kelly. That story this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today from 3 to 6 on 91.3. Northwest Arkansas's only Ronald McDonald House celebrated its 1-year anniversary this morning. Ozarks at Large's Antoinette Grajeda attended the festivities on the fourth floor of Washington Regional's Women and Infant Center Tower, and she has more.
For the last year, the Ronald McDonald House in Fayetteville has provided a home away from home for hundreds of families with a hospitalized child. Stephanie Medford, president and CEO of Ronald McDonald House Charities of Arkoma, says they've been at 89% capacity since opening their doors in December 2016.
So if you're thinking in terms of we have 6 bedrooms that a full family can stay in, that's a pretty significant volume, which includes over 1,300 overnight stays in the last year. Additionally, we have served over 300 unique families, and some of those families, we've had families that have stayed over 50 nights based on the care that their child needed here at Washington Regional.
Medford says the numbers are evidence that they're serving a need in the community.
I feel very grateful, as does all of our team, our board, our volunteers, and the hospital at Washington Regional, being grateful that there is a place for families to be, because there's going to be babies that are going to go in the NICU. There's going to be pediatric patients who are admitted to the hospital. But for their parents to have somewhere to stay, to keep close to them, is pretty crucial to their overall healing process as a family.
The nonprofit is marking another milestone. Since incorporating in 1999, the group has served more than 10,000 families through its dental program, as well as its initiative to provide a place to rest for families with children being treated in the hospital.
That's pretty significant when you're talking about the number of children. Sometimes there's multiple in that family that are being served by Ronald McDonald House programs. And so that's a pretty significant number for the population of the area that we serve.
Medford says they're always looking for volunteers to help with hospitality or cook dinner for families staying at the Ronald McDonald House. You can find out more at rmhcofarkoma.org. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten in part by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. The KUAF and Friends Holiday Giveaway is underway. It's your chance to win a gift from one of many generous KUAF underwriters. Participants this season include Bombadil's Cafe, Arcega's Coffee Roasters, and Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. Winners announced Friday, December 15th during the noon edition of Ozarks at Large. To register, KUAF.com. Holiday greetings from Arkansas Community Foundation. In this season of giving, the foundation offers tools to make giving easy, flexible, and efficient. Smart giving to improve communities. arcf.org/smartgiving for information.
This is Ozarks at Large. With me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio is Robert Ginsburg, who is the founder and president of the Northwest Arkansas Jazz Society, host of KUAF Shades of Jazz every Friday night at 10. And you keep us up to date on what's happening in the jazz world around here.
I try, Kyle. You know, it tis the season to be jazzy, as it turns out.
I did not know that. So what do we got this weekend?
Well, the 10th annual Winter Jazz Concert with Claudia Burson's group. Steve Wilkes puts this together at the Unitarian Church. That's coming up Saturday, December 9th. This is a really nice, intimate little concert. It includes Claudia's trio with Steve on drums, Drew Packard on bass, and Ben Harris on guitar, and I believe sometimes they add Austin Farnham. It's hot. It's sort of seasonal music,
right?
And it covers a lot of ground, and it's a delightful little venue. That's coming up on Saturday, December 9th, and you can find out all about that it's at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Fayetteville.
It's on Cleveland.
It's on Cleveland. Yes, I have two phone numbers here. 479-530-5840. And for better or for worse, there's another big event on December 9th, and that's the Supper Club, Arkansas Philharmonic Orchestra's Clef Club, or Chef Club?
Clef Club,
yes. Benefiting the Arkansas Philharmonic Orchestra, it's going to have cocktails and a three-course dinner and wine, and the APO Jazz Combo, which... That's the first I've heard of the APO Jazz Combo. You know anything about them?
No, I do not. But I know that Rachel Fields is...
She'll be singing.
Yes. And she sent me an email a couple of weeks ago and to remind me this is happening. She said, I'm kind of out of my comfort zone here, but I think she'll be fine.
She's got that bluesy.
Yeah.
She'll handle it. And I'm suspecting that the APO Jazz Combo are some players from the Arkansas Philharmonic who
have some
jazz chops. This is a fundraiser. Cocktails begin at 6 o'clock, and at 8 o'clock, the show begins. It's at Four Points by Sheridan in Bentonville. So two choices on that December 9th date. You know, Jake Herzog from over at the university, who's taken over the jazz guitar instructor position there, he has been doing a regular thing at the Stage 18 here in Fayetteville, and it's just sort of a jam session. His trio opens up, and then he invites students and players from all around the area to come up and play. That's happening on December 12th. I think that's a Tuesday. It's usually on a Tuesday night, but it's definitely on December 12th.
That is a Tuesday. That is the next Tuesday we have.
It's a $5 cover. It's a lot of fun if you want to come to a really freewheeling sort of jam session. And then on Friday, December 15th, up at Crystal Bridges in the Great Hall, of course, the Stuart Davis ongoing exhibit of Stuart Davis's work, and Stuart was an American artist influenced in a very big way by jazz and the whole jazz era. That exhibit is going on, but they're going to have an event that's free, although you need to go online and reserve a space. And it's Big Band Swing from the 19-piece JM Band of Northwest Arkansas. Susie Weiser is going to be singing, Scott Harris on trumpet. It'll be dancing, singing, big band music. And that's from 8 to 11 on Friday, December 15th. I should also mention... this Friday is the continuation of the Starlight Jazz Series at Walton Arts Center, but I'm pretty sure that's sold out. We talked about that last week, the Latin Jazz All-Stars. But you never know. Sometimes there's cancellations. So if you really are hot to see these guys, it might be worth hanging around the box office.
There you go.
Right before the show. The next concert, I just want to mention this. We're way ahead of it, Kyle, but it's part of the Walton Arts Center Starlight Jazz Series is Saturday, February 10th. Tickets are on sale, and there's tickets left for this, but I suspect it'll sell out. 3 Grammy nominations, 11 albums to his name. Donnie McCaslin, a saxophonist, will be there with his group. And if you're not familiar with Donnie McCaslin, he's actually appeared here before. He appeared here with Danilo Perez years ago. But he's struck out on his own and has a really cutting-edge band. And this band has been getting a lot of buzz because David Bowie chose Donnie McCaslin and his band to back him
That's
up
right.
on his last album,
That's
the
right.
Black Star album. So really eclectic, interesting take on jazz meets pop and also jazz sliding into the avant-garde. That's February 10th. Tickets are available for that now. Donnie has also worked with Maria Schneider's orchestra and a who's who of jazz players. So there is that. And I will quickly mention, if I may,
yes,
our local heroes who play on a regular basis. There's a lot of brunches, Sunday brunches. You have your choice. Amelia's does a jazz brunch every Sunday, and they usually have somebody playing there. Mm-hmm. A lot of times it's Gus and Matt Smith, but sometimes it's other players there at Amelia's here in Fayetteville. They do a jazz brunch at Sassafras Springs Vineyard as well. And then one of the longest running jazz gigs in town is at Copeland's up in Rogers. Claudia Burson's trio plays there on Sundays for the jazz brunch. And every third Sunday, Ben Harris replaces Claudia. So that's the big news as far as the big and the regular news.
There you go. Your show every Friday night, 10 to midnight on KUAF, every Saturday from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on KUAF 3. You can always find out more at digjazz.com.
Or drop me an email, robert@digjazz.com.
Thank you, Robert.
Thanks, Kyle.
Some members of Congress say their institution has a very particular kind of problem with sexual harassment.
Congress is an environment in which we support members for a very long time, even when they have done bad deeds.
So will new stories of harassment bring change? Listen every weekday morning to Morning Edition.
Morning Edition every weekday morning from 5 to 9 on 91.3 KUAF. This is Ozarks at Large. Kent Bonner, an Ozarks naturalist who's intentionally lived off the grid in the wilds of Newton County for decades, is the subject of a remarkable new book titled An Arkansas Florilegium. It's published by the University of Arkansas Press. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich brings us his story.
Kent Bonner spent much of his childhood outside with his grandparent in rural Johnson County in west central Missouri.
With my one grandpa, he had me out squirrel hunting before I could even walk hardly. And my other grandpa, you know, had me working in the garden with him. And while we were working in the garden, of course, he'd, you know, identify all the birds we heard and all the, you know, he had me to where I could identify all the weeds I was, you know, supposed to be pulling and, you know, not any of the crops or anything like that. So I could identify plants before I even got in grade school.
Bonner attended the University of Missouri at Columbia, taking both undergraduate and graduate courses in wildlife management and botany, where he also taught. He also studied printmaking, which would later deeply factor into his vocation. Instead of graduating, he moved to Arkansas, the Ozarks, in 1972, settling in Newton County, taking a job at Lost Valley, then a state park, as interpreter. But it was at a 1975 meeting at the Arkansas Academy of Sciences in Texarkana that Bonner began to collaborate with botanist Dr. Edwin Smith, who was completing a 580-page pioneering botanical survey, an atlas and annotated list of the vascular plants of Arkansas, along with Arkansas Tech botanist Dr. Gary Tucker, who was compiling data on woody plants of Arkansas. Collectively, the scientists and Bonner, who describes himself as a naturalist, quested to develop a partial inventory of the biota of Arkansas, a huge endeavor building on several 1940s lists. Bonner began with an inventory of the Buffalo River District, expanding to other remote Ozarks watersheds.
I worked in the Washitas several times at Queen Wilhelmina State Park, and then I worked at Pettigene. I worked at Devil's Den up here. I worked at Lost Valley. I worked at Buffalo Point over by Yellville. I worked at the Ozark Folk Center several times. So I've been all over, at least in the mountains. I tried to avoid flatlands.
Unlike his scholar colleagues, Bonner spent days, weeks, months conducting field work on foot, lugging notebooks, reference books, and on occasion, Smith's atlas in his backpack. He routinely collected plant clippings to render in the margins of the atlas, which contained no illustrations.
I didn't do a whole lot of formal collecting, and most of the collecting I did was just, you know, just getting something back that I could draw, you know, that night. You know, I'd try to, you know, sketch it in pencil in the field, and then, you know, I'd take a, you know, a leaf or two back with me so I could have that for reference that night.
Bonner drew by candlelight in front of a mirror on a small wooden table inside his cabin in Nail, where he's lived on and off since 1977, way off the grid, in solitude, surrounded by an array of critters.
some wild animals. I had a pet screech owl for a while that he'd ride on my shoulder. And he was one-eyed, too. He'd, you know, a similar car wreck victim.
Bonner had an unfortunate affinity with the bird. He, too, lost his sight in one eye in a terrible truck wreck on a rain-soaked rural road years back. Bonner says he's always lived a life of volunteer simplicity, something he learned from his grandparents.
A good way to respect the past, and I think eventually the past is going to be our key to out of the mess that we're in now. People are going to have to step back from the edge and, you know, get back to where, you know, we're living at a lower standard of living and, you know, more in tune with the rest of the world. So I think that, you know, people should consciously try to simplify their lives, like Thoreau said.
For a time, Bonner led the Newton County Wildlife Association, the Ozarks' first nonprofit forest advocacy group, focused on blocking the U.S. Forest Service from logging, burning, and saturating native timber stands with herbicides, restoration regimes still in practice in part today. Bonner, now 66, continues to explore and document the Ozarks Highlands, but after a fall, realized he had to do something to preserve his legacy.
Fell in Hurricane Creek one time. We were having a native plant workshop down, you know, our medicinal plant workshop down in Hurricane Creek. And so I was wading across the creek and slipped and, you know, about midway and go down and my backpack goes floating down the creek with the book in it. And a friend, you know, retrieved it about 100 yards down. But by that time, it had soaked real good, and so I had to spend all night sitting over a fire turning the pages, one page at a time, to dry it out.
Referring to his treasured copy of Dr. Edwin Smith's Plant Atlas, which Bonner, over a 40-year span, had fully illustrated with 3,500 drawings and numerous field notes, fortunately in India ink, which is permanent.
I started out by illustrating the endangered species I was supposed to be looking for, you know, here in the Ozark National Forest. And so for a lot of that, I couldn't find a live plant at first, so I had to go to the herbariums and draw, you know, herbarium specimens, and Dr. Smith let me do that. And so did Tucker, and so did Jewel Moore down at Conway. So I was working with those three herbariums. And so if I couldn't get that, I'd have to go back to one of these other old-time reference books and pull their drawings, which sometimes weren't as good. But so the quality of the drawings varies a lot in that book, depending on my source.
Bonner donated the Atlas to University of Arkansas Special Collections. There, under direction of then-director Timothy Nutt, archivists Steve Cochran and Josh Youngblood unbound the ragged text, scanning each page for posterity. University of Arkansas English professor Robert Cochran came across Bonner's fieldwork and pitched having it published by the University of Arkansas Press. Bonner's illustrated atlas is newly released under the Arkansas Character Imprint Series, jointly sponsored by the Center for Arkansas and Regional Studies and the David and Barbara Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History. As for noted Arkansas botanist Dr. Edwin Smith, who passed away in late January, he managed to see a new edition of his atlas, an annotated list of vascular plants of Arkansas, updated and republished in 2015, Bonner says, by Arkansas Heritage Commission and University of Arkansas Herbarium.
It's organized alphabetically, first by family, then by genus, then by species.
With corresponding county maps, as is Arkansas Florilegium, the atlas of botanist Edwin Smith, illustrated by naturalist Kent Bonner. The book's fascinating introduction, composed by Robert Cochran, draws comparisons of Bonner to German engraver Albrecht Dürer and Italian artist Leonardo da Vinci, both botanical illustrators, as well as English botanist and early explorer Thomas Nuttall, the first field naturalist to identify Arkansas flora. Bonner's book, however, lists an array of Arkansas rare and endangered plants.
And we don't know which of those plants are going to be here, you know, in another 100 years or so, or less, you know, at the rate they're going, you know. And the way extinctions have progressed in the past, you know, most people weren't even aware that there was a chance of extinction until it happened. You know, things like the passenger pigeon that were real common, but a lot of other, you know, rarer plants just drop out of the picture. You know, nobody's seen one for decades and, you know, then forever. So, you know, that and that's kind of the attrition that's going on now. The Ozarks used to be one of the most diverse places in the country as far as, you know, just overall biotic diversity. And it's becoming a lot less, so they're simplifying. It's not good.
Arkansas Florilegium reveals mostly what is presently Arkansas's rich botanical diversity. For the record, for Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
A pair of book signings for an Arkansas Florilegium are scheduled. The first is Saturday at Arkansas House at 215 East Court Street in Jasper. That's Saturday afternoon from 3 to 5. Arkansas House, two blocks north of the square on Arkansas Highway 7. The second signing takes place Thursday, December 14th, at the Botanical Garden of the Ozarks in Fayetteville from 7 until 9. The duo Still on the Hill will perform a tribute to Kemp Bonner at both of those book signing events. If you'd like to learn more about the book, you can go to uapress.com.
91.3 KUAF is supported by Highlands Oncology Group. Highlands Oncology's cancer specialists provide comprehensive, collaborative care, allowing patients and families to stay close to home. With locations in Benton and Washington counties, Highlands Oncology is helping patients fight the battle every day. HighlandsOncologyGroup.com. Walton Arts Center presents the Broadway musical Finding Neverland, beginning December 19th and running through the 23rd. The production tells the story behind the character, Peter Pan. Playwright J.M. Barrie finds inspiration in four young brothers, their widowed mother, and their make-believe adventures. WaltonArtsCenter.org or 443-5600 for tickets. Holiday greetings from Arkansas Community Foundation. In this season of giving, the foundation offers tools to make giving easy, flexible, and efficient. Smart giving to improve communities. arcf.org/smartgiving for information.
This is Ozarks at Large.
With the design costs covered by the Walton Family Foundation, the city of Springdale is now turning to its residents to approve funding to build a new criminal justice facility downtown and renovate the city's existing administrative offices. This is the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. I'm Paul Gatling. Springdale residents will decide in a special election on February the 13th on whether to authorize an issue of bonds and existing sales tax revenue to fund construction up to $42.6 million on the municipal campus. It's one of several bond issue items on the ballot. An 85,000-square-foot criminal justice building would be connected to the existing 47,000-square-foot administration building at 201 Spring Street. Design of the new complex was paid for through a $3.3 million grant from the Walton Family Foundation's Northwest Arkansas Design Excellence Program. The new facility will bring several city departments and services previously separated under one roof. The city's jail downtown will also be removed, and the municipal courtroom will also be expanded. We've got much more about this story on our website at nwabusinessjournal.com. This is the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. A losing football season not only hurts the morale of Razorback fans, it also stings area businesses to the tune of nearly $1 million. That's according to University of Arkansas economist Mervin Jebaraj, who appeared on this week's edition of Talk Business and Politics. He said the school has studied trends on two occasions, and the results are pretty significant.
We've talked about this a little bit before when we talked about Frank Broyles' legacy, but a very important part of the regional economy here in Northwest Arkansas, and especially in Fayetteville, revolves around the fall football games and a couple of other events like Spikes, Blues, and Barbecue. So, you know, in the summer months when the students are gone, the entertainment district on Dixon Street has, you know, slower sales because there isn't nearly as many people, and a few, you know, 6-7 weekends in the fall more than make up for the business that they lost in the summer. So, you know, those businesses really do depend on football fans coming out there and spending their money. And so A poor season has an effect in several different ways. One is that they move the games out of prime time, so it's not an evening game or a late afternoon game, which means that fans are less likely to go out to Dixon Street at 11 in the morning when the game starts at 11 in the morning. Not that some don't, but they're less likely to do so. They're also less likely to stay in the region when the games start that early because they could just as easily drive back to whichever part of the state or another region that they come from, because most of the attendees at Northwest Arkansas football games here in Fayetteville come from outside Northwest Arkansas. That number varies between 68% and 72% of the attendees come from outside this region. So if it's an early game, they don't stay. They're not spending as much money in the hotels. They're not spending as much money in the restaurants and bars. So when we did this study, we've done it twice so far. When we measured it once in Bobby Petrino's last season, and we measured it another time during Brett Bielema's third season, and we actually found some measurable differences in people's spending based on how well the team was doing. So Bobby Petrino's last season, we were ranked fifth. I think we had 11-2 season that year. And the average fan spent something like $100 per game per person, and that translated to roughly about $5 million per game here in Fayetteville in 2011. In 2014, when we did that study again, this was Brett Bielema's third season with the Razorbacks, and we had a mildly winning season, but we weren't ranked. And the spending was something like $80 per fan per game, and it roughly averaged to just over $4 million per game. So, you know, you're looking at $1 million difference depending on how well the team was doing in terms of how much fans spent. And, you know, that's fairly evident. So if the team's doing well, people like to spend more money. And then, of course, attendance, if it goes down, that results in less money. So if we had 10,000 fewer people in the stadium and we assumed that all of them came from outside Northwest Arkansas, that would be about $800,000 or so less in spending per game.
Jebaraj also examined the latest GDP numbers for the state of Arkansas, which showed upwardly revised numbers for the fourth quarter of 2016 and first quarter of 2017.
Arkansas is doing really well compared to the nation. You talked about those revised statistics and the most recent one. So we're looking at, you know, Arkansas's GDP growth, who is ranked sixth, then 8th and 14th in the most recent reading, all of which are pretty good rankings compared to the rest of the nation. So, you know, we're seeing growth here, at least in the state, that's faster than the national average of where the U.S. economy is going. And we're seeing the reason for that growth is, you know, multifold. One of them is that the U.S. economy in general is doing pretty well. We're either in the 101st or 102nd month of economic expansion, which is, you know, on track to become the second largest economic expansion in U.S. history. That's a good sign for the economy. Sectors that are doing well nationally, non-durable goods manufacturing and wholesale trade are also doing well in Arkansas. You've seen around the state a bunch of manufacturing announcements. A lot of that is in non-durable goods manufacturing. That's doing great. That sector is also doing well because the U.S. dollar has been trading weaker in recent times, and that obviously helps the export picture. So put all of these wonderful factors together, you know, Arkansas's economy has been growing a lot faster than the national average, and that is certainly something we can celebrate here in Arkansas.
And that's Mervin Jebaraj with the Sam Walton College of Business at the University of Arkansas. You can hear more of his interview with Roby Brock on our sister website, talkbusiness.net. We're back after this.
Support for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report is provided by the Arkansas State Chamber of Commerce and Associated Industries of Arkansas. The Chamber's mission is to promote a pro-business, free enterprise agenda and prevent legislation, regulation, and rules that hinder business. More at ArkansasStateChamber.com. First Security is proud to be only in Arkansas, and it shows in your banking experience. They offer smart solutions for personal and business banking, plus convenient services and community investment. That's because First Security is 100% focused on serving customers all across the state and nowhere else. It's local banking with local commitment. First Security. Bank better. Member FDIC. Equal housing lender. And OneCom. OneCom, providing voice and data solutions that adapt to today's demand with tomorrow's technology. Communication tools that integrate mobility with the desktop and merge wired networks with the wireless technology. More at 1-COMM.com or 479-715-8800.
And finally today, Arkansas now has an estimated 80,400 women-owned businesses that contribute $9.5 billion in revenue to the state economy. That's according to a new report analyzing data from the U.S. Census Bureau. The number of female-owned businesses in the U.S. overall is up 88% from 20 years ago. Arkansas is ranked 23rd in the growth of women-owned companies during that stretch. And that's all the time we have today for the Northwest Arkansas Business Journal Report. Remember to keep up with our daily reporting at nwabusinessjournal.com. You can also look us up on Facebook and Twitter. I'm Paul Gatling. Thanks for listening.
A service of the J. William Fulbright College of Arts and Sciences at the University of Arkansas. This is 91.3 KUAF, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Dutch Mills. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kelms. Thanks for spending part of your Thursday with us. Tomorrow, another packed, brand-new edition of Ozarks at Large at noon and 7. Hope you can join us. If you can't join us at those times, you can always go to KUAF.com or OzarksAtLarge.com and listen to it later. Share it with your friends through Twitter, Facebook, and other social services. You can also subscribe to us as a podcast for free. iTunes will let you do that. Stitcher will let you do that. You can find us on NPR One. You can find us on the KUAF app that's available for free for many smartphones and tablets. I'm sure we're other places that I don't even know exist. Thanks so much for your support. Back with you tomorrow at noon and 7. Oh, we're going to end today's show with music from Opal Agafier and the Sweet Nothings. They recorded this inside the Carver Center for Public Radio. We do this because they will be at George's Majestic Lounge. That's coming up Saturday night. And then if you got New Year's Eve open still, they'll be at Chelsea's with Blue Dream Blue on New Year's Eve, December 31st. This is Opal Agafia and the Sweet Nothings. Have a great rest of your day.
Well, pink lemonade and the white ties, toots pop cheeks and darling eyes, broke love shoes, your favorite spice, peppermint kisses and rose and night. It's the one down, baby, to go.
Feel my shoes.